Midway across the Hudson River was a perfectly circular disc.
Well, the thing just hovered sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I saw it.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that these days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead. Doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
Strange day indeed. Most peculiar, mama. Roll.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Hello and welcome to edition 459 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that covers the news, the politics, the personalities, and the cases of UFOs. This time, publisher of Alien World magazine and our British correspondent Stuart Miller, Dr. David Clark. And for those of you who recall the mention in the last program about Kevin Randall's article in last month's Fate magazine on former police officer Herb Shermer's close encounter of the fourth kind, a 1974 recording of Shermer describing what happened to him. The clip is available on Wendy Connor's Faded Discs at fadeddiscs.com. First up, though, our contributing editor, Dave Verlott.
These are Strange Days Indeed on UFO News Radio. Here with his take on it is Dave Verlott.
I speak with a lot of people on and off, and I'm always interested to hear what they think or believe about UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence. But I recently spoke to someone that has a strong anti-UFO, and more importantly, an anti-extraterrestrial intelligence opinion. We're going to call her Mary, and Mary is a young lady in her 20s that is familiar with a lot of the better-known UFO information, such as Roswell, the Phoenix Lights, the O'Hare incident, etc., and she firmly believes that UFOs are nothing, and there are no other intelligent life forms in the universe but us. In other words, we are alone in the universe. That is not all that uncommon, because I've encountered that kind of blinkered thinking before, mostly based on a strong belief in one religion or another, and true to form, Mary is a devout Christian who believes that God only created us, and her belief does not leave any room for God creating anyone else within the universe. As I said, her belief is not singular. My own religion is Catholicism, and I've encountered a number of Catholics who follow a similar belief. But unlike Mary, most of those I've encountered over the years follow what I call the ostrich syndrome. Whenever the subject of UFOs or extraterrestrial life is mentioned, they refuse to discuss it. They virtually stick their head in the sand and make it impossible to have a discussion because, with only one person speaking and offering any kind of opinion, well, it quickly becomes a monologue. Now, recently, as of May 16th, 2008, the UFO updates list had a thread regarding the Vatican now granting Catholics the right to believe in alien life forms. This is not something that is done lightly, and could even be considered as serious as when the Vatican granted permission to Catholics to eat meat on Fridays. So it should be seen as something that is now viewed as fait accompli with a large number of Christians about the possible existence of alien life and the further extrapolation that perhaps our tiny little planet might be undergoing visits from other worlds, right? Well, as a matter of fact, I offered up this little fact in my discussion with Mary, and her reply totally floored me. Mary has a strong belief that there is, in fact, a major UFO and alien conspiracy happening, but not the same one that I and many of you listening to this believe in. Mary believes that UFOs and aliens are going to be shoved down our throats by governments so that we have no choice to believe they exist, and in reality, they really do not exist in any way, shape, or form. In fact, she believes that if a flying saucer were to land on the lawn of the White House and alien creatures emerged to introduce themselves, that it would be nothing more than some staged stunt by a government agency. Now, what's even more startling is that Mary's belief has a strong foundation within the Christian religion based on what is referred to as the end of days within some of the religious groups, because there is some obscure text that is being interpreted as UFOs and alien life forms being accepted by all of us on Earth as one of the signs of the impending end of our existence. The problem that I have with Mary's belief is that she is a young lady within our society that has grown up with greater access to information than my generation ever had. And to be blunt, her thinking shows a closed mind that I never would anticipate finding in a young lady in her 20s. In fact, I find it difficult to believe that anyone can be so totally ensconced in their belief that they simply refuse to allow anything to impact that belief. Prior to the Vatican allowing Catholics to believe that alien life forms can exist, most Catholics simply refused to discuss it, which also showed a closed mind, but they weren't saying that aliens and UFOs don't exist. They were simply refusing to discuss the possibility. People that think like Mary will gladly discuss UFOs and alien life forms because they will happily tell you they don't exist. And regardless of whatever evidence you present to them, they simply state that it's all part of some great conspiracy to prove that UFOs and alien life forms exist. Let me repeat this again. The great conspiracy is happening around us, and it is to prove the existence of UFOs and alien life forms. So, if we were to believe Mary, it would appear that you, dear listener, and I, and Errol, and everyone that studies ufology are all part of some great conspiracy to prove the existence of UFOs and alien life forms. That means that somewhere out there, some government agency owes me a lot of money for doing my part in keeping the great conspiracy alive. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Perlot, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yeah, you and me both are owed a fortune, Dave Perlot.
To say the least.
And what's really interesting is that the end of days started around the time of airships in the 1800s, huh?
Yeah, we're talking something here that's like, it didn't start last month.
Or back in the 1500s, or back in 1947.
Exactly.
Boy, the end of days is taking a long time and I'm getting bored.
It'll be going on forever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it that I look at and I sort of chuckle about is, to be blunt, UFOs and aliens really don't need any help from us to try and prove they exist. They're proving it all by themselves.
What happens when the aliens land and the end of days doesn't happen?
That'll be the, well, that's only one sign.
Ah?
We need this now, and we need this, and we need this, and it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. It's much like those cults that go hide in caves.
Exactly.
And wait for the end of days and then leave it to the prophet to explain away why the days haven't ended.
That's right. Or in some situations where that particular cult says, oh, well, the end of days is like tomorrow, but before it comes here, drink this Kool-Aid.
Oh.
Sorry.
The dangers of cults.
Oh, just incredible. And to be blunt, a lot of the organized religions can be thought of as cults. Even my own particular religion, Catholicism, when it first started in Rome, the Roman government considered Christianity a cult.
And by the way, your next assignment, should you choose to accept it or not, is to find that passage in the Bible that Mary is basing her beliefs upon.
Oh, I will. Yeah, my first situation was it had me absolutely thrown. Actually, I'll have her try and point that out to me. I'm going to be very curious. Again, it's interpretation to fit whatever criteria we want.
I thought the Bible wasn't open to interpretation.
Well, again, it's one of those situations where people have been interpreting it for centuries, depending on who you talk to. One group will tell you, oh, no, that's the word as it is, as it exists. Well, hold on a second. How many times have we translated it? From how many languages?
And how many of us read Greek?
Yeah, well, not only Greek, but you go back even further than that. Greek, Hebrew,
Aramaic,
you name it.
Good luck, Mary, and all who sail with you.
Yeah, exactly.
I name this ship Mary. Oh, enough foolishness, please.
Yes.
As if there isn't enough of it going on around us as we speak.
I just find it funny that the great conspiracy is the exact opposite of what we say it is.
And talking of conspiracies, Dave Clark is being accused of conspiring with the MOD to cover up UFOs.
Oh, of course. That's always the key, too, in that situation. Somebody turns around and shows something, anything that is contrary to what a particular person believes. That's always the big one. Oh, well, geez, you must be part of the problem. You are part of the conspiracy. It's like, no, these are the facts, folks. You can't put them away just because you don't like them.
Well, it'll be interesting to talk to Dave later on, Dr. Dave Clark, and Stuart Miller. A couple of Brits on the program this time. And mostly, I bet, about the MOD recent document release. Burry, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk again soon.
For sure.
Indeed. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't have any, but I can get it. I don't have an eye, but I can get it.
Get it.
I don't have an eye, but I can get it.
Get it.
I'm gonna do the best I can. Well, I get it.
Get it.
I get it.
Get it. Get it.
As we do every couple of editions of this program, we head across the pond for the first time in this edition of Strange Days Indeed, because a little later we will talk to David Clark about the Ministry of Defense file releases that have happened recently. But this time we head across the pond because Stuart Miller is there, and he's our British correspondent, also the publisher of Alien Worlds magazine, headed for issue number 3, I believe it is, this time, Stuart?
You are correct, yes, issue number 3 coming up, and as we speak, as good as done. Not yet in the shops.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Those of you who haven't yet seen it should head to alienworldsmag.com and suss it out and subscribe.
Thank you.
Hey, it's the least I can do. You've been with this program for many moons now. You deserve all the encouragement that can possibly be laid on you because you do such sterling work over the years.
I'm very kind of you.
You're providing a fine service.
Errol, I appreciate that.
As far as the serious UFO researcher, there is really nothing out there now other than Alien Worlds.
Yeah, it would appear so. I mean, there is, yes, and there is UFO magazine in the States.
And Fate magazine, they all do stuff.
Oh, yes, you're quite right, they do.
And interestingly enough, the issue of Fate magazine that I just got has articles by both Jerome Clark and Kevin Randall.
Well, Jerry has a very long association with Fate, doesn't he?
Yeah. So what has been tweaking your interest, as if I didn't know, of late?
I don't know what David Clark is going to say about the MOD files, but my interest has been stimulated immensely by the furore that's built up on the updates mailing list over the last couple of weeks about the files. I don't think it's straightforward. I think it's a very complex sort of series of reactions from a number of people. I mean, I've just read a posting from Don Ledger, who, in one sense, makes a very valid point, which is, well, you know, really, these files aren't up to much. The Canadians have released them ages ago. Somebody else made another point a while back. Might again have been Don, that the Australians released their own files a long, long time ago. So what's all the big fuss? It's a very good point. It's possibly because the UK maybe has a slightly higher profile than Canada, Australia, maybe. It's open to argument that in relation to UFO cases. Maybe the element of secrecy has grown to a larger size with the UK than with other countries, and so more was expected. What really perplexes me is a line of thinking of people that have gotten very, very snappy towards David Clark and, to an extent, Joe McGonagall as well. And the real intense level of emotion, and it's almost as if people are taking it out on David that it appears that nothing significant is coming out of these files and the MOD are not that interested in UFOs. And I think people feel threatened by that. And the point I want to make is, and I want to state this very clearly, I am of the opinion that UFOs are a real phenomena. I'm of the opinion that it's quite possible that a percentage of UFO sightings, however big that figure is, may well be extraterrestrial craft piloted by intelligent beings. There might be. And I am also of the opinion that the MOD and the American government, the British government, and probably most other governments, if not all other governments, have no idea what this phenomenon is about. The point I'm trying to make in saying all that is that just because the MOD shows absolutely no interest, or apparently so, in UFOs, or has no smoking gun of UFO files, does not mean that the UFO phenomenon has gone away or evaporated. It's still here, big time. And I don't understand this thinking many people have, which is that the government knows the answers and the government are keeping all this information back, and only until we can twist their arm halfway up their back and whatever and get them to release this information will the truth come out. I'm fairly sure, it's not a case of thinking, I'm fairly sure they haven't got a clue. Why would they, or why should they, other than less you believe aliens have made contact and have done so directly with world governments? I don't think that's happened. But that doesn't mean that E.T. isn't visiting us. And yet people seem to have followed that way of thinking and have reacted with real venom in some ways towards Dave Clark because of this. I have to say as well that I don't think Dave Clark and Joe McGonagall always help themselves as well as they could do. I think that they could probably sometimes express their opinions in a subtler manner. They could perhaps take into consideration other people's feelings perhaps a bit more on that point in terms of how they express their views. I think it is that that's been a red rag to some people.
I think that a lot of the reaction to the release of the MOD files and their seemingly not being any interest in UFOs on behalf of the British government probably spills back to Roswell and the fact that supposedly there was a lot of stuff that was recovered in 1947 in the desert, supposedly bodies and wreckage and all kinds of evidence that was then stashed away. So if the U.S. government has been doing the cover-up, then every other government must be doing the cover-up as well.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that's quite clearly the line of thinking. I actually think it's a very weak line of thinking, because what it does is it shifts the responsibility as well from the individual to the government, and it's very, very easy to kick against the government and to blame them for absolutely everything. But it doesn't place upon the people that do that any responsibility for investigating the phenomenon themselves or thinking about it or for reasoning and rationalizing the whole phenomenon through in their minds. They leave it to the government to tell them.
Yeah, there's nothing to tell, apparently.
Exactly, yeah. I have had a lot of sympathy, believe it or not, for the Ministry of Defense over the years in relation to UFOs, because without doubt they regard the whole phenomenon as just a major irritation. Other than a concern at first, with radar sightings appearing and no explanations, no logical or reasonable explanations, and I mean good reports as well from pilots of sightings or radar traces or whatever, other than that, nothing has happened. The UK's air defense security, okay, you could argue it's been compromised, but nothing bad has resulted from it. Nobody in the UK, to my recollection, has been killed by a UFO, or indeed has a pilot been killed or lost his life because of involvement with or chasing after a UFO. So in the end, you sit back and you think, well, yeah, okay, these blips keep appearing here and there, and we get a lot of reports, a lot of them quite wishy-washy, but also a lot of them, admittedly, from people that work for us in terms of the armed forces. But in the end, what are we to make of it all? Well, the bottom line is nobody's getting hurt, so they can't do anything, and as they're not a threat, they lose interest. The problem then becomes that the public start climbing all over their backs. The way that the Americans have treated the subject has impacted on the Ministry of Defense over here, because that has created a pressure on the Ministry of Defense, because of public pressure. And it just becomes a nuisance. And every so often, they get pricked into doing something about it. I think in the end, although there is evidence that at some point, and they possibly still do, regard Dave Clark as a real irritation and a nuisance, I think in the end he's done them an enormous favor, because they'll get all these files out, and in the end they can just send out blanket responses to anybody that makes an inquiry about a UFO. Check our website. It's mm-hmm. all there.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that's it. And they can wipe their hands of the whole thing.
And save themselves a huge amount of money in the process.
Yes. I think it's down to individuals to accept responsibility, so to speak, for the phenomenon and not to look to governments. Stephen Bassett, with his recent posting on updates, where he talks about disclosure, I think is just whistling in the wind. I don't think you are going to get disclosure from the U.S. government, because I don't think the U.S. government has anything to disclose, other than the fact that they'll have the same sort of thing as the MOD, except probably a lot more.
The U.S. government...
The U.S. government, yes.
Yeah, there appear to be other agencies who've been involved since 1947.
I think every conceivable intelligence agency at one point or another has been involved in the UFO subject in America.
And could well still be involved.
Oh, definitely, yes. Oh, yes, I think the American Air Force is still very heavily involved. And amongst all these many thousands of reports, there will be a percentage which are truly anomalous and utterly puzzling and cannot be explained. But it doesn't get us anywhere, because nobody can explain it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I hope we're not going to get this every few months or so as new cases are released, because it is an ongoing process, this, from the MOD. They're going to keep releasing files in trenches.
So over the next many years, by the sound of it.
And hopefully there'll be something that will come up that will actually interest us, instead of cases like the drunken man near Gatwick Airport who reported a light in the sky. I'm surprised they even wasted the paper on that one. I hope there are more intriguing cases that come up, and I suspect there will be.
I guess we're just going to have to sit tight and watch the battles evolve on our screens.
Indeed. Again, I come back to Stephen Bassett. He was talking about disclosure, and I made the point to him that with the Mars Phoenix lander up there on the red planet at the moment, it was very likely that it is going to discover microbial life up there, and that this will be announced. I don't think there's any way around this. If the lander discovers something, it will be announced. It's not a case of them being able to hide whatever it discovers, simply because the world's eyes are on it at the moment. And really, there's no reason to hide that fact.
No.
So you get the American government, and I carry it's a very loose term, that, because it won't actually be the government. It will be NASA, or it'll be Arizona University, whatever. But you will get an announcement from an American institution about this. And that, frankly, is likely to happen this year. Phoenix Lander's mission is only due to last, I thought, even maybe 6 weeks. And it's not coming back. It isn't moving from the spot that it's in. It's not a rover. It stays static. And it analyzes. It does the experiments up there. It's got 3 mini laboratories on it. It'll analyze the information up there and then transmit it back to Earth. I'm sure NASA will argue that we need time to study this information. And they may well do. They may well do. But it ain't going to take them that long. This is what's interesting, really. Whilst it's a reflection of where our priorities lie, if the truth be told, the past 2 weeks or so, UFO updates has been ablaze with all this MOD file release stuff. when the real story is happening 400 million miles away. And the one thing that we've all wanted to hear right from day one is very likely going to be announced, and we're all ignoring it, which is that, yes, there's extraterrestrial life. It exists. Now, of course, I'm not going to be obtuse about this. This is not really what people want. They do not want to hear about microbes or things that can't be seen unless they're sitting in a telescope and magnified by 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. They want living, cuddly, furry aliens. And I don't blame them. I want those as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the first step, this, and it is going to happen. Now, Stephen Bassett seems to think that this is part of a plan, and that when Barack Obama is elected, as is probably going to be the case, and in January next year when he finally takes office and it kicks off a short time after, there will be further disclosure.
No, there won't. That would have happened with either Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton.
They weren't ready then. It's not part of the plan or whatever.
Well, I don't think they're ready now. Certainly not to admit that we've been visited by whatevers and there's nothing they can do about it. They're not going to fess up to that until something lands in front of the White House and while a live broadcast is going on, or somewhere where a live broadcast is going on where they have no options but to say, well, yeah, okay, it's real. Other than that, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I absolutely agree with you. There's another option. It is that extraterrestrial intelligence bypasses the government and just decides to plonk itself down right in front of us. That, frankly, is more likely than any disclosure process from a government, I think.
They absolutely have been doing that for a long, long time, plonking themselves down in front of us. It just happens that they managed to avoid plonking themselves down where there's a decent camera or a decent set of cameras, you know. And whether that's deliberate or they have no concept about live television, I don't know. Or if they really care.
If they didn't care, then why would they be coming here? Well, yes, you can end up walking down all sorts of avenues.
Yeah, we don't know.
Still on the subject of space, did you hear the story, and it is a true story, about the toilet on the International Space Station?
Oh, yeah.
Blocking up.
Oh, God. It's bad enough when that happens down here, but out there.
And particularly with a lack of gravity as well.
Oh, my. Oh.
There isn't artificial gravity, is there, up there?
No.
No, you see them floating around.
And the people, too.
Yeah, absolutely, yes, yes.
It makes for really ugly images.
Well, I actually think it's hilarious, but then, you know, I've got the brain of a 10-year-old, and I still find bodily functions funny, so...
That's very British of you, isn't it?
You're quite right.
I mean, there is a fascination with the Brits, bodily functions, so...
I'll tell you another story that's absolutely caught my eye. I guess when people are listening to this, they will know how it's resolved itself. But I'm thinking of Jeff Peckman in Colorado Springs, the man who has tried to convince Colorado Springs local council to create an extraterrestrial affairs commission to liaise with aliens when they land. And in order to boost his case and to enhance his case, because the council there are giving consideration to his request, but he is going to release a film of a real alien which will prove conclusively that aliens exist.
Mm.
And he's going to use this to convince the council of his case. Mr. Peckman, who is unmarried and lives at home with his mother, is, I think, going to make a great tit of himself. Well, I'm fascinated to see how this is going to turn out. For me, it just seems like it's just heading for controversy, arguments, and tears.
Yeah, is that video not from Stan Romanek?
Yes, Stan Romanek.
I've had Stan on the program in the past, and have always felt him to be very genuine, very sincere, and very honest.
Just to add to that, the film is by Stan Romanek and a technician by the name of Jerry Hoffman. A professional film editor with more than 30 years of experience has examined the film and insists that it's genuine, that it's not been
tampered,
it's not a fake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The film will show a grey alien peeping through a window. The thing is about 4 feet tall. The only thing that shows up in the video is the head. It pops up from underneath the window. The eyes blink. The cheeks move. The head is turned from side to side. So no doubt it will be partially obscured, it won't be very long, and it won't be very clear.
Nobody has actually seen that footage yet, have they?
Nobody's seen it yet. And when it is played at a press conference, the media will not be allowed to videotape it. It ain't going to work.
No.
You're then relying on a bunch of cynical journalists to report what they saw, then you're just going to get torn to shreds, frankly,
of course.
I think.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me in the first place when it first came up on the list.
The film is a new addition to this story. It originally caught the eye because he applied to Colorado Springs for this extraterrestrial commission, and people just thought he was nuts. But it's grown. I do wonder if there's any money floating around at the back of all this.
There's a job for whoever Jeff, whatever his name is.
Yes, it will, yeah.
Smacks of exopolitics to me.
Billy Cox. Billy has thrown up an interesting story today about how the intended theme park at Roswell, which has been cancelled, one of the people behind the proposal, who's very disappointed, reckons it all makes sense that it's cancelled because it's all part of the cover-up.
Oh, no.
Of E.T. So I thought that was quite funny. It caught my eye, that. Don't let a theme park go ahead. It'll give too much away. There's a new article in the latest edition of New Scientist. And I haven't read it because you have to pay, and I refuse to pay the New Scientist. But I have read a long extract from it. And it is by a gentleman called Stephen J. Dick. Not Philip, but Stephen. Who is the former official historian of SETI, and he's written the book The Biological Universe. And basically he's turned upon his former employee, so to speak, and claimed that SETI's approach is too narrow. He makes an interesting point, which is that any advanced intelligence out there by now would have evolved beyond the biological physicality and would have turned into artificial intelligence. And wouldn't necessarily be living on a planet. Essentially, the SETI needs to broaden its approach and take this point on board. The point I'm trying to make here is that it is such an open canvas as to where ET, where intelligent extraterrestrial life might have gone, that it is not beyond our comprehension. The range of possibilities are just so vast. And I guess the more I think about this, the more I realize that whilst I think that SETI are a very easy target to pick on, it is actually right that people criticize them, because when you think about it, just listening out for radio signals is very limited and very restrictive. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it, and they haven't got unlimited funds, although they are fortunate enough to have some very wealthy benefactors, but they have not got unlimited funds, so they can only spend their money in so many different ways. But I just think as time passes, the chances of us picking up a radio signal is reduced, simply because there are so many other potential avenues. And it could well be that maybe SETI is never going to be successful, and we may never get to what we want with them, and that we truly, if we are going to do this intelligently, we do have to look at other means of searching for ET.
And lots of us have been saying that for a very long time.
Indeed.
Not sure how one would continue the search other than via NASA and space exploration. You know, going and looking at some of these strange moons around various planets.
I think NASA can only do what they're doing, really, which is bit by bit, after Mars. Well, you know, this is going to be long after you and I have passed from this mortal coil era, but Europa is very attractive, and sooner or later they'll get something up there. They'll send a Mars Phoenix lander equivalent to Europa, and they're very likely to be successful on the basis of current thinking. Okay, that's not intelligent life, but it's unlikely to be. It's the only way we can go. There isn't a political will to spend vast sums of money on this, and NASA's always been criticized anyway. The moment the Phoenix lander touched down, I was reading comments and observations on the internet about what a waste of money it was. We were getting it on the radio in the UK as well, because there was a big fuss made about Phoenix lander arriving at Mars here. Also, a lot of interest in the UK in what it does and how successful it will be. And there were people saying, well, it's a complete waste of money. Just think what you could be spending that money on. It's true. You can't argue with the point made. But if mankind is to progress, in other words, if we don't look to the future, if all we're doing is firefighting, so to speak, and just dealing with immediate problems, and trying to alleviate those will never move forward. We have to be proactive. We have to look to the future. And in three generations, maybe four or five generations, something within that order, maybe a little longer, we are going to have to think about getting off our backsides off here and going to live somewhere else, or some of us will. And even if we don't have to do it, it's going to happen anyway for commercial reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball has to start rolling at some point. It involves spending money.
And I like some money spent on high-res photographs of the far side of the moon.
Yep, I agree with you.
One keeps on hearing these stories and rumors about stuff on the far side of the moon. Well, let's go clear them up.
Having said everything that I've said in the last half hour or so, I did notice that UFO reports themselves are still rolling in at the same old rate. In other words, people are still seeing things time and time and time again. It's still going on. It isn't decreasing. There are UFO reports all over the place. Even if there is some earthly explanation for it, people are still seeing things all the time. It's never going to go away, this. They're still with us. They're still out there.
And people like you and I will still continue to be totally intrigued by it.
Yes, but I don't know about you, Errol, but I don't expect to find answers, I'm afraid.
I've said that several times over the years. I can't see it happening. Not in my lifetime. Well, Stuart, I think we covered off the current events. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. And look forward to the next ish of AlienWorldsMag.com. Go check it out. Thank you, Stuart.
And thank you very much, Errol. Thank you.
Happy third issue.
Thank you.
Dr. David Clark has written 7 books on different aspects of supernatural belief and tradition, including volumes on UFOs, ghosts, and angels. He teaches journalism at Sheffield Hallam University and folklore at Sheffield University in the UK. He's also a regular contributor to the BBC History magazine and the Fortean Times magazine, where he writes a monthly column with Andy Roberts, Flying Sorcery. And he's been a prime mover and shaker in the recent release of UFO-related documents by the British Ministry of Defence. The last time he was on, Dr. David Clark and I talked about the upcoming release of the British Ministry of Defence files on what they publicly know about UFOs. And, of course, in the last week or so, files have been released, and so we head back across the pond to Sheffield, and Dr. David Clark joins us from there just before going on a well-deserved vacation. He's been a busy man for the last month or so. Hello again, David.
Hello, Errol. Nice to speak to you again.
It's good to have you on, especially someone who's relatively close to the MOD as far as these UFO files are concerned. So, did it live up to your expectations?
I didn't really have any expectations. As you're probably aware, Errol, a number of these files have already been released previously at our National Archives in London, somewhere in the region of about a good 150 to 200 files, stretching from the time of the Foo Fighters right up to the early 1980s. And what we've got to see here in this new release is just a small group of 8 files from the mid-1980s. And this little group of 8 files is different because anyone around the world can log on and download them from the National Archives website, whereas the earlier files are all paper files and you would have to physically go to London, get yourself a reader's ticket at the National Archives and have a lot of time, really, to sit there and pore through the documents. what happened now with the Freedom of Information Act is that after a long process of cajoling and persuading the MOD to cough up their remaining collection of material, they finally agreed to do that. And it's totally down to cash at the end of the day, because with the Freedom of Information Act, they can no longer stonewall. They have to respond to requests. And because of the coordinated campaign that I've been waging with Joe McGonagall, Gary Anthony, various other people over the last few years, we must have cost them quite a lot in terms of time and money in answering our requests. And we've obtained something in the order of 10,000 pages of documents on UFOs from them, from a variety of different Ministry of Defence branches. And at the end of the day, I mean, I asked them, I tried to persuade them back in, I think it was 2001. I've had several meetings with them since. I've said, it's about time that you came clean, that you released all these documents. Initially, they didn't want to do this. And I think now they basically had to, because they've sat down and done the sums, and they've just thought, well, if we continue answering Freedom of Information requests one at a time, these people aren't going to give up. This campaign is going to go on. Therefore, it's going to cost the taxpayer much less in terms of tax dollars, as you describe it, if we just get them all scanned, remove all the personal details of witnesses' names and addresses, etc., and we'll pass them all over to the National Archives. And that's the process that's begun. And we've seen 8 files. I don't know whether anyone has had the stamina to look through them so far in any great detail, but if you think about it, we've got another 150 files to look forward to, or not, over the next 3 years. All of them will be uploaded onto the website. The address, if you need it, is www.nationalarchives.gov.uk/UFOs. We've got the documents. What they tell us is a different matter altogether.
When you say you've got the documents, is that all the remaining 150 as well, or just the most recent release?
Well, no, the 150 files, these are not documents. They're files with several hundred pages in each of the files. The remaining 150 are being prepared as we speak for release, and they will be released over the next 3 to 4 years at intervals of, I think, 3 to 4 months in small batches. So later this year, probably in August, we will see another group of files, probably another 8 or 10 files released. And the plan, so I'm told, is that they will have all the material up to the year 1992 released by the beginning of next year, and that by the end of next year we should be pretty much nearing the millennium in terms of the files that are going to be released. And it's quite interesting as well, we're getting a number of different files from different branches of the MOD. We're getting the Secretariat Air Staff files, which is the civilian branch, who advise the Chief of Air Staff, the branch that Nick Pope used to work for. We're getting those, but we're also getting DI-55 files. There's somewhere in the region of 26 to 28 of those. These are the same files that we used for the database, for the Condyne report. So they will be released as well. So we're getting a whole range of material from different branches. And it's interesting when you look at these papers, you can see how the different branches talk to each other and corresponded with each other, or not, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you can see is, what's demonstrated by these papers, I think, is the total lack of interest in the subject. They really saw it as something that they didn't want to deal with, and what it also reveals is incompetence. So I think that is a story in itself. It's a scandal, really, that there were things going on in some of the cases that Joe McGonagall has highlighted on your list just this last few days, you know, where there were reports of missile-shaped objects coming in close proximity to airliners, and it seems one department wasn't talking to the other department, that no one was really interested in following these things up. You've got to come to the conclusion that there isn't a conspiracy. And I know I put the cat amongst the proverbial pigeons by saying there isn't a conspiracy, but I cannot see how you can look at these documents and reach any other conclusion. The conspiracy, really, is the fact that they've decided that they're not interested. How they could reach that conclusion, I don't know, but I presume it's all down to cost and the fact that they just don't want to get themselves involved any further than they have to.
And in view of the missile-shaped objects that were reported by commercial airline pilots, one would think that would immediately trigger alarms as to national security.
Yes, you would. But what I'm saying is there's no evidence in these papers that is the case. It seems that they've just continually played down the subject. They've kept these files, it seems, from what I can make out, simply because occasionally these things get into the newspapers. Members of Parliament hear about these incidents and they write to the Ministry of Defence saying, well, you know, what's going on? And, of course, the Ministry of Defence have to answer those inquiries. They can't stonewall members of Parliament in the way that they stonewall members of the public. So they've kept these files so that they can come up with some kind of wording where they can say, yes, we've checked these reports for defence significance, there's no threat to defence, that's the end of the road as far as they're concerned. And you have to accept that that is the level of their responsibility. At the end of the day, they have to account to the Her Majesty's Treasury, which keeps a very tight rein on what money is spent on. And at the end of the day, they say, we don't get money to investigate the scientific aspects of these phenomena. We're not an aerial identification service. That's how they put it. We receive a report. If it's deemed to be of interest, if it's corroborated, if there is a visual sighting and a radar sighting, which are extremely rare, according to them, and that is, does seem to be backed up by the papers, they'll look into it in more detail, but only to make sure that what's been seen isn't an enemy aircraft. Soviets, terrorists, whatever. As soon as they've eliminated that, they're no longer interested. They've been saying this for years, but no one has believed it. And unfortunately, I think it's the truth. And this will upset lots of people and lots of people who post on your list. But the facts are the facts. And it's no good turning around and shooting the messenger and saying, ah, right, you've only got these papers released because you're working for the government yourself and you're all part of the conspiracy. I mean, to me, that is such a dead end. It's not having to deal with the facts. You cannot argue with a conspiracy theories, unfortunately, that they can't be disproved. They're non-falsifiable. And I just think it's a shame that people have reacted in the way that they have to these files, because at the end of the day, there is lots of material of interest in there. If people take the time to go through there, they will find lots of interest. The fact that the government or the MOD in the UK haven't followed these sightings up and haven't taken them seriously, there is lots of interest in here. And when we get to see the full run of the papers, when we get to see the 150 other files, there's no smoking gun in there. There's no evidence that we've been visited by ET. But there's lots of evidence of weird things in the sky that we can't explain, some of which we can't explain. Mm-hmm. Just that I don't think there's evidence, there's any of them proves that we've been visited by aliens. But that doesn't mean to say they're not interesting. That's my position. I think it's quite a moderate position.
To go back to the remaining files to be released, the 150, have you seen any of those? Have you or any of the British group over there seen any of the contents of those?
Yes, we have. I mentioned in advance of this decision to make these files available to everyone on the National Archives website, we'd obtained somewhere in the region of 10,000 pages of documents, mostly from these files that are due to be released. We did that between about 2003 and just this last 6 months, really, by targeting freedom of information requests to various parts of the government, not just to the MOD.
You mentioned radar. How many of those reports actually include radar traces of unidentifieds?
Well, just from this little snapshot of, I think it's 8 files that have been released, this first batch, all you need to bear in mind is that they've been released chronologically, so we're getting the, I think, from about 1981 to about 1985 in this first batch. I can't think of more than one incident, or two at the most, in there that involve radar. And the one that stands out is the report from the crew from a Royal Navy Sea-King helicopter that detected something on their airborne radar moving at some fantastic speed, I think about 3,000 miles per hour. This was over the Bristol Channel. They made a report about it. The MOD seemingly just made some checks with some of the surrounding ground radar stations at RNAS, Culdrose and the Portree. Because nothing at the relevant time was detected on their radars, it was dismissed as anomalous propagation. Now, it may well have been, but very difficult now to say 30 years later whether this was something that should have been followed up in more detail. But nothing was seen visually, so all we've got is something unusual on radar. Interesting, if you're interested in that sort of thing, but it doesn't take us much further. I don't think, really, we're going to see much more than that. We're going to see a few more incidents involving radar, but nothing that I can recognise from, for example, reading Stan Friedman's comments on updates in the last few days about the fact that UK air defence systems and various others around the world are constantly being alerted to the presence of UFOs and fighter jets are being scrambled and this, that and the other, there is absolutely nothing to suggest that that has gone on in the UK. I'm not saying it's not gone on elsewhere, but there's certainly no evidence in these files that that kind of incident happens on a regular basis here. If it does, how do they keep it quiet? Who is the secret department that receives all these reports, and how come even the likes of Nick Pope, who worked there, he's not come across that? He knows of a few incidents involving scrambles involving RAF aircraft, but, you know, we're talking one or two over a period of 20 or 30 years, and that doesn't mean to say that what was investigated turned out to be something unexplainable.
Which is all part of the conspiracy.
Well, exactly, yes, yeah. I just think, really, to say that someone like myself, who has campaigned tirelessly for the last decade to get this material out there, to turn around and tell me that I'm working for the government and that, you know, all this is a whitewash, I just find completely insulting. To say that I can't hold opinions of my own that I've reached through decades of experience in the field, that I'm not expressing what I truly feel about this material, I'm voicing someone else's opinion who is paying me to do so, is just ludicrous. It's a desperate last-ditch attempt to try and dismiss the importance of these papers, because they are important in their own way, although they don't provide the evidence that some people are looking for. But unfortunately, there are people out there who have a very preconceived idea about what they expect to find. And it has to be said, in some cases, people are just wanting to know where the bodies from Roswell are hidden. And, okay, we've got disclosure, but it's not provided them with that answer. Therefore, it's of no interest. Well, what a strange way of looking at the result. We've got the truth. The truth is here. The fact that people don't want to hear that truth is not really my problem. But, you know, I think it's a bit much to attack me as the messenger, the person who's got this material out, and to suggest that I've been involved in some kind of conspiracy. I'm just left speechless. I really am.
Much like saying that Stan Friedman is part of the Roswell conspiracy.
Well, exactly. Yes, I respect Stan's opinion. In fact, Dan makes it quite clear that he believes these things are here and that they're alien craft. Fair enough. He's very clear on that. I disagree with him, but he's got as much a right to hold an opinion as I have. It just seems, with respect to these files, that everyone else seems to be entitled to hold an opinion, honestly, except for me, the person that's done the work to get them released.
You mentioned that Stan Friedman maintains that they are here and that they are alien craft.
Yeah.
On which point do you disagree with him, or both?
That's another very good question. Let me make it clear. I am not someone who dismisses UFOs as being of no interest. I think there are inexplicable things that people have seen. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Things that we cannot account for using all the usual explanations of aircraft and balloons and meteors, etc. I'm pretty convinced that there is something there. There's no doubt about it. From all the people that I've interviewed over the years and the contents of these files, I'm convinced that there is a real UFO mystery, a phenomenon. But I don't think it's one phenomenon. This is the mistake that a lot of people make. The hardcore of cases that can't be explained, I don't think, are one thing. There are a range of different things, possibly natural phenomena of some kind. I know people will laugh and guffaw when I mention the Condyne report and the plasmas and that kind of thing, but I think that there may be onto something there. I've always been interested in the phenomena such as earth lights, earthquake lights, ball lightning, that kind of thing. I think that figures in some of the unexplained cases. I don't think it figures in all of them. I'm quite open-minded as to the possibility that some of the residue could be some kind of supernatural phenomena. I don't necessarily think alien craft, but something supernatural. I don't know. I think the most honest position to take is that I just don't know. You know, I don't see how you can take another point of view, but I just think the extraterrestrial hypothesis is something that is specific to our time. The fact that lots of people believe it doesn't mean to say that equals true. We go back to the Middle Ages, there are lots and lots of people who believed in a satanic pact with witches. In the UK, for instance, or England as it was then, magistrates, the members of parliament were convinced witchcraft was real, that the devil was ever-present everywhere, and as a result, people were burned at the stake. And the fact that loads of people think something is real doesn't make it real. I'm not saying that that ruled out the possibility that some of these things could be ET craft. That may well be the case. I'd remain open-minded. But all I'm saying is that whichever way you look at it, there isn't any evidence to support that hypothesis. And reducing it to simple terms, we wouldn't be here debating the subject if that evidence was available, would we? And there would be no UFO updates if there'd be no debate, because we would know the facts. And to suggest that the only reason we don't know the facts is because there's some huge conspiracy that's stopping us from seeing the evidence, I just think is ludicrous. It's just laughable, and it's not a radical point of view to hold. As far as I'm concerned, it's brain-dead and sheep-like. I think it's far more radical, and I'm being provocative by saying I don't believe there is a conspiracy. I think that's a radical thing to suggest. And I would ask all these people out there, like Stan Friedman and Stephen Bassett and Don Ledger, have they ever considered that they might be wrong? I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just being provocative. I'm just saying, stop for 1 minute and just think, what if there isn't a conspiracy? It doesn't mean to say there aren't any UFOs, or there aren't even any ET UFOs. That's quite possible. But just forget about conspiracies for a minute, and let's deal with what we've got. That's my position.
Yeah, on the one hand, there's a lot of claiming to need to do scientific work, and yet, on the other hand, in many instances, when presented with facts, there's a blinkered attitude toward the facts, and I'd sooner continue doing what I do because this is what I believe.
Yeah, there is, and I think a lot of people are in a comfort zone that they know what they know, or they think they know what they know, and they've got very strong opinions. A lot of people, it seems to me, are living in the past. They're only interested in what's in the Project Blue Book files, etc., etc. Things have moved on. Things have changed since the 1950s. There is a lot of other material out there now. And there seems to be this situation where people say that they want disclosure, but the reaction to the release of these files makes me wonder whether they do want disclosure. They only want disclosure if it tells them what they already think is the facts. And I'm afraid, I keep using the phrase I particularly like, I think is attributed to Daniel Webster, but that people want the truth. But I think it was Daniel Webster that says that there is nothing as powerful as the truth, and often nothing as strange. And people have got to accept that the ideas that they had about what the truth is about UFOs, they finally do get to hear the truth. It might not be exactly what they're expecting. And I think you've got to be open-minded. And I think the people who promote the conspiracy theories that are really closed-minded, because they will not accept that they're wrong or that they could possibly be wrong. And again, we're back to things being non-falsifiable.
Well, I think we kicked that can pretty solidly.
I mean, it seems to me, Errol, that I just watched in incredulity the reaction to my comments that were reported in the New York Times the other day. I mean, for starters, the New York Times rang me. I didn't ring them. They obviously thought that I had something interesting to say, and I'm not going to say, no, I don't want to talk to you, New York Times. They want to ask me about the work I've done on the release of the files, and it's to me whether I talk to them. But I had a conversation with a reporter that lasted 45 minutes, near to an hour. I've got it on tape here. And they used one line out of that 45 minutes. It wasn't misquoted. I did say that the government has been telling us the truth. There are lots of weird things in the sky, some of them we can't explain, and there's not a shred of evidence for a single alien visitation. I stand by that statement. I think every one of those facts can be, every one of those statements can be supported. That doesn't mean to say that there isn't anything in the UFO subject. I'm not saying that UFOs don't exist. I'm not saying that ET UFOs don't exist. What I'm saying is, anyone who looks at the material, as they are going to be able to now over the next couple of years, and anyone who is really open-minded has got to reach the conclusion that the truth is there. It's just that people don't want to hear it. They want to hear a different type of truth. And it's not just me that's saying that. I mean, I'm not talking about my government. The UK government has been telling the truth that there's no conspiracy. Nick Pope is saying exactly the same thing. If you look at all the statements that Nick has made, he's saying he's worked there, there's no conspiracy, he never saw any evidence of conspiracy. Now, he has a totally different point of view to what I do. I'm not quite sure where he stands, actually, but he has certainly a different point of view in terms of UFOs per se. But he and I, who come from totally different backgrounds, totally different approach, we're both saying exactly the same thing. But what I'm also saying is, regardless of what the government say or don't say, that, I think, is a false trail. if we're relying on the government to get to the bottom of this, we're wasting our time. I mean, the government don't have answers on loads of other important things. They don't have the answer on climate change. They don't have the answer on sorting out the mess in Iraq. Why should we think that they know the answers about UFOs? It's a bizarre idea. They can't get anything else right, so why should they get this right? I mean, our government here in the UK have just lost several million personal details by sending a CD through the post. And we're expected to believe that they've got this super-duper Men in Black agency that's able to intercept all the best UFO sightings. You know, it's ludicrous. It's fantasy. They've done a very, very bad job. And this is what these files show. I think the real conspiracy is the fact that they've done such a bad job and they're trying to cover that up. They've had no interest in the subject whatsoever, when they should have done. That's my view.
They absolutely should have done. And that's part of their responsibility.
Exactly. But the complacent, the UK government in particular, they will not do anything. They won't spend money on anything or investigate anything unless they're absolutely forced, kicking and screaming, to do so. And the only way that they'll do that over here, anyway, is if something is proved to be a definitive threat. I mean, like, prior to 9/11, for instance, you know, that our air defences were at a very low ebb. They weren't spending money, they weren't doing anything to prepare for what happened. And since then, they've had to do it. But they won't do anything unless it can be demonstrated that there is a real threat from something that might be called UFOs. And at the moment, they can argue that there is no threat. So, therefore, they don't have to go cap in hand to the Treasury. I'm afraid it's all down to money, Errol.
It's an interesting for me, as I've been observing things over the years. You just mentioned Nick Pope. There seems to be, I don't want to use the word hate on, but there seems to be an aggressive attitude by certain British UFO researchers on Nick Pope. Do you have any idea why that is?
Well, I think you need to ask Nick that, really, but I'm absolutely baffled by Nick's position on this, because it seems to me that rather than working with British UFO researchers across the board and cooperating, he seems to have decided that he's going to go it alone, that we're in some kind of Chariots of Fire race where there's some guy with a starting pistol and he's got to be in the front all the time. Rather than sort of working with people and cooperating with people and acknowledging the work that other people have done, he's painting himself into a corner where no one else has done anything except him. I mean, you just look at any of his public statements. He never once anywhere has he acknowledged the work that myself has done, that Joe McGonagall's done, that Gary Anthony's done. You know, we're not asking for medals or anything, but it would be nice to simply be referred to, and just a simple acknowledgement, I mean, for the work that we've done. That's all that we're asking for. Also, the fact is with Nick, it's a bit difficult to know what to say. I mean, I've tried to talk to the guy. I've tried to sort of say, look, Nick, let's work together on this National Archives release, for instance. And he's not interested. Why is that? I don't know. He's got to answer it. And he has also made many, many contradictory statements. If someone makes contradictory statements, or they make statements, for example, like for the existence of this UFO project that he keeps talking about, it's very, very strange that only he seems to be aware of this UFO project. I mean, I've interviewed a number of the other people who've done the UFO desk officer job, both his predecessors and successors, and they all sort of look blank and say, what UFO project? We've never heard of such a thing. Maybe it's just the way he decided to talk about this, but the fact that he's making public statements, and if you go and look at the papers now, as they're all coming out, you're going to be able to see the holes in some of the things that he's said. All I've tried to do over the years is simply say, hold on a minute, Nick, you're saying this, but what about this evidence, or what about what so-and-so says? And his reaction is, I'm not talking to you because all you do is make personal attacks on me. Well, simply asking awkward questions isn't making a personal attack. It's simply saying, could you answer this, please? But I don't know. I'm really sad that we've reached a stage where we've got this sort of standoff where we've got groups of different people who all should be working towards the same thing, which is understanding this mystery, have to be in this sort of bizarre game of one-upmanship and competition. Any time that Nick wants to meet me, talk about this, sort it out, and work together, I'm happy to do that. That's all I can say, but all the attempts that I've made have been rebuffed.
And, of course, there are those conspiracy theorists who could say that based on the evidence around Nick Pope. He could be part of the conspiracy.
Well, they do say that about Nick, don't they? The fact, unfortunately, that he has worked for the government in this department has become a thorn in his side, in that people who don't want to take on board what he's saying are saying that. And all I can say is, in support of Nick, I think he's made some very, very sensible, factual statements over this last few weeks while he's been reacting to the release of the files. I think he's done a very good job in presenting the work that he did at the Ministry of Defence. And all I can say is, I've got no trouble with Nick's position. I've come at this from a totally independent point of view. I've looked at most of the papers that cover the period when Nick was at that desk office job, and I think he's telling the truth. I don't agree with his interpretation of the material. I mean, he came to the conclusions he came to looking at the same papers that lots of other people looked at and came to a totally different conclusion, but I respect his opinion, and I think by and large he's done a very good job of presenting a positive image of the subject. That's all I can say. But again, conspiracy theorists will just believe what they want to believe at the end of the day, and nothing that Nick says and nothing that I say will change their minds.
Absolutely. Seems to me that there must be at least one or two books in those files.
Yes, I'd certainly like to see all the papers released first before reaching any sort of conclusion. But at the end of the day, when we've got these files, these ones that have been released under the Freedom of Information Act, don't forget, as I mentioned right at the beginning of this interview, there are also an equal number of files that are already at London's National Archives in paper form. And if you go on the website, they've actually scanned some of the earlier files from the 1950s, and I think you can download those for a price. But when we look at the whole run, what we've got there, I mean, a lot of the earlier files have been destroyed. We talked about those last time, didn't we, Errol? But
yeah.
All in all, what we've got there is some 60 years of material. I think, really, there's probably too much for us to cope with here and now. And one of the reasons why I wanted to get this material at the National Archives, rather than hidden away gathering dust in the bowels of the Ministry of Defence building, is because whatever you think or believe about UFOs, this is a fascinating piece of social history. And I hope that in 100 years' time, after I'm long gone, that someone will sit down and be able to make sense of what happened at the end of the 20th century, the beginning of the 21st. I don't think necessarily that I've got the know-how or the knowledge to do much with this stuff, other than just get it out there and get some context added to it.
The future readers, the future observers, will also base their reaction to this on future events.
Yeah, they will. We can't predict what's going to happen.
No.
I mean, maybe we will have the final proof. We will know something. I mean, great progress has been made. Stuart Miller was saying on one of his postings quite recently that we're within a few days' time, we may know whether there's water on Mars, and therefore, you know, the possibility that life may be endemic in the universe.
Perish the thought that Richard Hoagland could be proven right, huh?
Yeah. Well, miracles never happen.
David Clark, thank you, sir. Enjoy your holiday, and we'll probably talk again soon.
I look forward to it. Thank you for inviting me on.
It's a pleasure, always. Bye, David.
Bye.
Yeah, we'll hear it come. Here comes the night.
And to round out this edition of SDI, here's the aforementioned 1974 Florida talk by former police officer Herb Shermer.
I guess I should tell you a little bit about myself before I get into the experience that I had. I was born in Missouri, and I was brought up as a service brat. My father was a career man in the Air Force. I went to school in Japan, Germany, France, and Hawaii. I jumped around quite a bit, so I didn't get much of an education when I was young, but I did finish it all later. When I was 17 years old, I went into the military service, United States Navy, and my first duty station was in Jacksonville, Florida. And then from there, I went over to the Far West Command, and I helped serve our flag and fight for it in Vietnam, even though I felt it was an immoral act of war. Then, coming out of the service, I went back to Missouri and spent a couple of months there. And I went home to Nebraska, where my folks were. And I wasn't making very much money being out of the service, you know. $2 an hour being a clerk was my bag, really. So I wanted newer fields, so I always wanted to be in law enforcement. So I talked to my father about going into law enforcement, and he decided that the State Patrol in Nebraska would be a good idea. So we fill out the forms and everything, and I had to go to the Ashton, Nebraska, to the police department to get a police check. So I walked in, and 5 minutes later, I was a policeman. They hired me there. My life before this happened as a police officer, the short time I was a good one. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with the public and serving the community and serving the laws of the state. Now I guess I'll get on with the story. It was along 2:30, actually, I think, was the time that this happened. But right around 2:20, I was just checking two gas stations. I left the last gas station that I checked to pull onto the highway, and I was making radio contact with the Wahoo Sheriff's Office because we didn't have radio communications available in the city at nighttime because we couldn't afford it. So I told them that everything was all secure. I pulled onto the highway, and putting the mic down, I seen some flashing lights in front of me. First appeared to me to be a truck, I thought. As I got closer and put the high beams of the lights in the patrol car on, this object started raising. These lights started raising up in the air to about 40 feet. I think I was something like 50 yards from this. These lights were flashing, and they got bigger as I got close to it. It seemed like they were red flashing lights coming out of a porthole, which sort of circled the craft. It had like a catwalk going around the center of it. It was shaped like a football, very metallic, like a very shiny bumper, if you polished a bumper on a car. It had sort of a reddish, orangish glow coming under, from beneath it. And then there was this white flash that came on to me in the patrol car. It felt as if we were being pulled. And then it was being pulled. You know, we were being pulled up the side of this bank to the left of the road and up toward this field, the car and I. I felt nothing. I at first I felt kind of stunned and shocked, and then I felt sort of tingly. And as the car and I moved up the bank to the top of this field, this object landed, and some legs came out, and it sat down. I was just sitting there really motionless. I couldn't move. I may have even had my mouth open. I don't remember, you know, being probably scared. This hatch came open, and this light came out of the hatch, and this form came down and looked the form of a human being. And this form started walking toward the patrol car with an object in both its hands, appeared to be hands. And he was walking straight toward the patrol car. As he was doing this, another form came out and started walking toward the patrol car also. As this being got in front of walked up to the front of the patrol car with this object in his hand, which looked sort of a squarish oval type. It looked like it had a lens in front of it. And the only thing I could think was, oh my God, what's going to happen now? This green light came out all over the car, and then saw light went back in again. And I felt a sensation, and then I felt nothing, like I was just there and that was it. And this other being started walking up toward the car. I was sitting straight, looking straight. I couldn't even move my head. And he walked up to the car, and the window was about three-quarters of the way rolled down, and he had an object in his hand, a silver object that looked like a big pencil with a round ball on the end of it. And he pressed this against the side of my neck, which I felt some pain from, and said, ouch. Then he stepped back, and I sort of sat there, and he opened up the car door and just went like this. And I sort of raised up out of the patrol car, and I was looking at him, and he was looking at me, and he said, are you the watchman of this town? And my response was, yes, sir. He said, come with me, watchman. And we started moving toward the spacecraft, and it felt like I was walking on air. We got up to the hatch to where you went inside of the spacecraft, and we just sort of like floated up into the first level. And he says to me, "Watchman, come with me." And we were in a circular room. And there were a lot of cylinders about 4.5 feet high and about 2 feet wide that circled the whole room. And it had sort of like a cable running through it, two cables running through these. They looked like tall batteries to me. And then in the center of this room was a huge cocoon, or, you know, like this shaped object, was spinning, and it was giving off colors like the rainbow, and was about 20 feet long. And it seemed like these cables were coming up and connecting to these two block things that came down on each end of it. And we walked the complete circle in there, and I said, "What is this?" And he said, "This is how our craft operates." And he said, "It operates on electrical reversible magnetism." And then I looked at him, and he said, "Come with me, watchman." And we walked back over to where I had came up in with him, and this glass sheet came down. And we stepped onto this, which I felt, and we moved up into the second level of the craft. And lo and behold, I've never seen anything like it before in my life, with so many different types of instrument panels and computer-type things that you just wouldn't believe it. This cone thing was right in the center of the floor. You can see half of it from on top and half of it from the bottom, but it gave off a red glow that sort of, not flashed, but kind of died down and then came back up again. And he says, "Watchman, come with me." And we walked over to a screen that was up on the side, I say, wall. It was sort of like a TV screen, and he pressed some buttons and I guess flipped some switches. I wasn't paying too much attention to him. I was looking at the screen, and some stars in the sky appeared on there. And he put his finger up like this, and he said, "This is where we're from, watchman." And then he put his hand back down. He didn't say where, and he didn't say the name. He just pointed. "The purpose that we're here is to get electricity." And there was another being standing a little distance away, and the man turned to him, and they both looked at each other, and he started depressing buttons. And he says, "Watch, watchman." And there was this antenna on the outside of the spacecraft which angled toward a power unit, and this bolt went out. A color I've never seen before in my life, and I don't even think I could describe it, went out and came back. And this stayed like this for about 3 minutes, and then it went off. And he turned and looked at me, and I felt as I was getting an awful lot of roll of input of words that I couldn't understand. And he reached up and he touched me on the shoulder. And he felt real when he touched me. And I think at that time I did touch him, and he felt real to me. And he says, "Watchman, come with me." We walked back over to the exit, I'll say, where we came up, and the glass sheet came down again, and we went up into the third part of the craft, which was the observation deck, he said. And as we stepped off, he said, "Watchman, come with me." And we walked over, and we were standing there looking out of a big plate glass window type thing. And there was a control panel right in front of it, and there were two chairs that looked like dentist chairs. You know, I've ridden to the dentist chair, but really a superstructure of a chair, better than a dentist chair. We looked out the window, and I could see this one being walking back and forth by where my patrol car was. And I think I said, "Wow." And he turned to me, and he said something I don't understand. And he said some more things that I didn't understand or couldn't make out. And I still don't. And then he pointed his hand toward the plate glass window, referred to the stars out there. And he says to me, "Watchman, one day you yourself will see the universe as I have." And he reached up and he touched me on the shoulder. Like this, you know, like grabbing you on the shoulder, like a man does, to steer you away. And he says, "Come with me, watchman." And then he stopped. And he said, "Watchman." And I turned around like this to look at him. It felt I was like I was getting more input of something that I couldn't understand. Then he says, "Watchman, come with me." We walked over, and we went down all the way out of the craft. As we got outside, this other being started walking back towards the spacecraft and boarded it as we were walking toward my patrol car. And we stopped right by the patrol car, and I turned to look at him, and he was looking at me. And then again, it felt like I was receiving an input of words of some kind that I couldn't understand. And he turned, he sort of lifted his hand, and then he turned and walked back to the spacecraft, floated up inside. This catwalk thing started spinning. The lights started flashing off and on. This red orangish glow came out from beneath it. It started lifting up in the air, and I guess it got about 100 feet high and just shot straight out of sight. Let me tell you, I was scared. I started feeling me again. When I was aboard the spacecraft, I had hardly no feeling at all. My body was tingling. I was perspiring. I was hot. I felt nauseated. I got back into the patrol car. I turned it around, and I headed back for the police station. On the way to the police station at a high rate of speed, I tried to make communication with Wahoo Sheriff's Office, and it appeared the radio was dead. I got to the station. I jumped out of the car in a fast walk, walked into the police station, and I noticed that the wall clock in the police station said 1 minute after 3 a.m. Well, I went directly to the bathroom. I had to go to the bathroom but to drink water because I was hot. And I walked back into the main room of the police station. We had a real small police station. It was about 20 by 20. And I sat there at the table, and I lit a cigarette, and I said, "Wow, what the hell happened? Something happened to me. Did I really see a flying saucer? Did this really happen to me?" I looked at my report log, and I remembered through all the training and everything I went through that regardless of the nature or what it was, put it in your report book because you just might need it. So I looked at my report book, and I got my pen out, and I wrote, "At 2:30 a.m., December 3rd, 1967, I saw a UFO at junction 6 and 63, believe it or not." About 6:30 that morning, a fellow officer came in, and I explained to him what happened to me. And the fellow officer says, "I believe you heard. One time I was on my way to Wahoo, Nebraska, and I was driving down the road. I looked over. Lo and behold, there were two UFOs sitting in the field, and these little green men were out there walking around it, waving at me." I said, "Sure, Paul." And he says, "I don't think you should tell anybody, Herb, because I don't think anybody's going to believe you. Matter of fact, you're going to lose your job if you tell the people." But I said, "Paul, it's the truth." He said, "Well, you know," he said, "a lot of people won't even accept the truth." I said, "Well, I'll wait for the chief." He says, "No, I'll go on home." So I went home, and I was, you know, I really felt like everything was drained completely out of my body, and I laid down on the couch. And as I laid there, I started getting a buzzing feeling in my head. And it felt like I was being, I had pressure on my body. I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't, you know how you try to open your mouth and you can't say help? I was trying to say help, you know. And then I went off to sleep, and the phone rang, and it was the chief. And the chief says, "Get your butt down to the station right now. What is this? You mean you've seen a UFO?" I said, "I don't feel good. I'm sick, and I'm not coming down to the police station." He said, "I'll be right over." So the next thing, the TV came in, press came in, you know, newspapers, radio stations, and telephone calls started coming in. 2 days later, the ridicule started coming in. Believe me. And I had a man run 3 blocks, huffing and puffing. He owned the Goodyear tire shop there in Ashland, Nebraska, and he let me, "Herb, if you ever see another flying saucer and it lands, you tell him I want to sell him a set of tires." The phone ring, "This is the planet Mars," you know. I mean, really ridiculous stuff. I think, though, being here in Florida, one of the neatest walkings I got was right out here in the lobby. The gentleman out there selling books. And I walked up, and he says, "Herb Sherman." I said, "Yes. My name is so-and-so, and I was taken aboard a police cruiser." I thought that was neat. The United States Air Force Conan Committee, Blue Book Project, or however you want to say it, investigating team came down to Ashland, Nebraska to investigate me. A gentleman by the name of John Ahrens, who is a friend of mine, and a gentleman by the name of Roy Craig, who is a physicist. John Ahrens, he'd probably hit me, but he was a shrink, a psychiatrist. Him and I had long discussions, and he told me to tell my story over and over and over and over, and I told it over and over and over and over. And then they found a 25-minute time lapse in my log. And John says, Herb, what happened to you between 2:30 a.m. December 3rd, 1967, and 3 a.m., or a little before 3 a.m.? And I looked at him, and I couldn't say anything because I didn't remember. So he says, you got to come to Boulder. I said, okay. So they took me up to Boulder, and I met a UFO team there of a lot of people who run a lot of tests on me, and a hypnotist by the name of Dr. Leo Sprinkler administered time regression hypnosis on me, which found out a small detail that I had been aboard the spacecraft and that I had actually communicated with them. They played the tape back to me, and it shocked me. I didn't know what to think. I said, is that really my voice on that tape? You bet it is, boy. I says, my God, what do I do now? While I was up in Boulder, the city got real cute, you know, the city fathers and people in the city. The day I left, the night I left, they went down to our beautiful cemetery there in Ashland, Nebraska, and took this dummy and hung it by the neck in a tree and put a big star on it. Shot a hose through it and painted the hose with red like blood and put Herb across the star with a cowboy head on it. And they really made it look big because they went down to the mortuary and they got the ambulance out, a code 3 run, sirens, red lights, the whole works. Went over there and they very carefully took it down and put it on a stretcher and covered it up and took it back to the morgue. They thought they scared me, but they didn't. You see, that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to scare me, but they didn't scare me because I thought it was kind of funny, and I laughed about it when I read it in the paper and seen all the pictures and everything. But while I was in Boulder, they blew my car up with dynamite, and that really made me mad. I just got through paying for it, and I was furious. You know, I could have done like George C. Scott did in that movie Rage. You know, that's how mad I was. But through the whole crisis, I had one very good friend in Ashland, Nebraska. His name is Leroy Dimmitt, very close friend. And he helped me a lot in Ashland. He was one of our relief officers in the police department. And I was really proud to have him as a friend, as well he stuck by. My family, I really can't say. I went to my father and I said, Dad, I said, I know you have 20-something years in the Air Force, but I asked my father point blank, I said, Dad, what do you think of UFOs? My father never said no, and he never said yes. He just said, Son, if you're telling the truth, stick with it. And so I stuck with it. All right, thank you very much.
It was a night meeting, somewhere in a troubled land. They came with no greeting, left without a shaking hand. Nearby the town sleeping, was unaware of what was done. No need for watch keeping. They had begun before the sun. They won't admit on either side. There'll be no press briefing. Information classified.
And there you have some of what's been going on in the UFO world. If you haven't yet done so, might I suggest that you get real value for your time and go back and listen to all the archive programs. They're a solid grounding in as much as we can say is really going on around the planet as far as UFO phenomena are concerned. Thanks for your ears, your subscription, and above all, your interest. Till next time. We'll
this edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network.